back to another edition of the Pegcast. I'm your host, Michael Pagani, joined alongside Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Toronto Maple Leafs pregame host, Ailish Forfar. Ailish, welcome to the Pegcast. Thank you again for coming on.
Of course, so excited to be here. I'm excited to talk sports.
So we're going to be talking about sports. We're going to be talking about your career in sports media, just everything that's going on right now. And to open up, how have you been doing recently?
Great. Honestly, we were just talking off air about the Battle of Bay Street, which I got an opportunity to go to PWHL Montreal, PWHL Toronto, head-to-head, like being able to cover a little bit of the women's game with my role at Sportsnet's been awesome. Success has been beyond, I think, anyone's wildest dreams. So that's been incredible, deep in Maple Leaf season. So always ups and downs with that team, which is fun to cover. And spring training around the corner, like this is kind of the prime time for broadcasters. You've got everything coming up, so busy time, but I mean that's the joy of the industry, right?
Right, and let's actually get into the PWHL. What are your thoughts on the league so far?
It's outstanding, just the level of support, and obviously I played in the CWHL, so much different than what we're seeing right now. And I think that's for the best, right? Just the amount of support the girls are getting, the amount of coverage has made a huge difference. The money that's going into it, like sometimes you have to invest to see results. And I think we've seen that right up by putting more money into the game. You're getting sellout crowds, you're getting season tickets sold out instantly. You can't get a ticket, which is just a great sign in one part. Maybe next year we do some expansion to bigger arenas, but everything from coverage, social discussions you just have with friends that are like, I saw that game the other day, you're at dinner and it's on TV, like those are just such big steps forward. The girls are playing obviously unbelievably, which was never a doubt, so I can't say any more good things about it. It's just been such a blast to cover, and for all my friends that are playing, I just know that they've worked really hard to get to this point, so seeing them feel proud and almost be like, can't believe this is happening, it's such a treat to see.
One of the new things that the league brought was the jailbreak rule. What are your kind of thoughts on that? Because that's kind of a huge rule change.
Yeah, I think it's awesome. Honestly, I got a little PK time in my career. I loved being on the PK because I think it shifted from being passive to being more like a power kill, where you can be trying to create offense or not allowing the power play to just set up. So the fact that there's a reward for that, if you're able to like be able to break up a pass, go down and score, I think it's shown already. There's only been a few goals, but every time there is one, you're like, this rule rocks. And, you know, I don't think it's going to make its way to the NHL anytime soon, but it's nice that the league started something of their own. They don't need to follow all the NHL rules or IIHF rules. So I think it's awesome. It's so much fun to watch. And if I was on the power play, I would be a little bit more cautious and less passive, right, in terms of how I'm approaching playing, and the PKers have a lot of fun. So I think it's been a good addition.
And it kind of shapes the strategy, right? Like, do you put your more offensive players on the PK now, right? Because you have this rule in place.
Yeah, like, you know, when I was playing, whether it was NCAA or professionally, you'd have set PK units usually, and I wouldn't say they were the most offensively minded players, because you obviously need a defensive mindset. You need a really good face-off person, and then people that are willing to block shots and willing to, you know, muck it up in a sense. But I've seen the shift to the PWHL where they have some of their top players that are a bit more offensively minded playing the PK, which makes it more fun. But if you were a grinder like me, one less opportunity to get on the ice. So you're like, let me get a shift in there. But no, it's been really fun. Like, who doesn't want to watch more goals, right? So it's been really fun.
What my last note on the P-Dub here is how they're making the game more accessible. They're having the streams on YouTube. The full game replays are available on YouTube after the game, and that's just very important for the visibility aspect of the league.
Yeah, the idea to put it on YouTube. Yeah, why weren't we doing this before? It's kind
of
literally. It's so easy. And when you watch, like I've sometimes done a split screen where I've had it up on my laptop just to see the viewership, 15,000 people streaming. The chat is excited, whether it's just new fans being like, oh, I like that number 8. Who is that? Or I'm watching from, you know, Brazil. Nobody was watching women's hockey in North America, let alone all over the world. So such a simple thing, a very accessible. Everybody can go on YouTube. Everybody can stream it on their phone. You can, if you don't have cable, you don't pay for Sportsnet, TSN, or CBC, there's still a way for you to watch. A really small thing in terms of decision making, but it seems like it's made a huge difference. And I think there's a completely different YouTube audience also. Like, there's people that love YouTube for other areas. And if it pops up on your home screen, maybe you're like, oh, what is this? Like women's hockey. And so you watch it. So I think it's just a really great way of adding fans. And anytime that is there's accessibility to watch, you can't really say no.
We got to get into the Leafs, right? I mean, your whole job is kind of centering around them. Another win, this time over the Blues. Yet another Austin Matthews goal. It feels like we're talking about him scoring every game. How impressive has it been to watch his season?
It's actually been so much fun because you keep thinking, like, there's no way he's gonna get this. He's going to get another hat trick. And then he just inevitably does. And what's been most exciting for us as broadcasters is this year, it's like he's taken ownership in leadership, but also scoring in different ways, right? He's not just like Ovi that has Ovi spot. Not to say that Ovi's not, you know, one of the best goal scorers over time, and he might end up being. Matthew seems to be scoring different ways, whether it's in tight, whether it's a shot that, you know, no goalie is going to stop half of these shots that he ends up finding on net. One time there's power play. He's been getting PK time too. Like, it's been awesome to watch. He's got an opportunity to go for 50 tonight. I'm not sure when you're going to air this, but in Arizona, like, wouldn't that be the perfect story? At this point, we're talking 70. I saw the other day on his glove, he had the number 80 written. Don't know what that's for. Don't know if that's him manifesting wanting to score 80 goals. But whatever we're seeing with Austin Matthews is something that hasn't been done in a really long time. He's already getting himself in the conversation as the best Maple Leaf ever. And he's got a lot more time to play in the blue and white. So it's such a treat. Like, it's so much fun to just come on the air and get to talk about Austin Matthews, but we're starting to run out of ways to talk about Austin Matthews. So I'm going to start, like, you know, having comparisons cross sport. Like, it, you know, it's just, it's really awesome. Can't believe that we get to cover him. We're spoiled.
Yeah, no kidding. Like, 6 hat tricks so far this season. That's like, hasn't been seen since Mario Lemieux. If he were to score 70, he would become the first since Alex McGillney did it. It's insane. Like, I, as a Habs fan myself, I can't really rag on him because that would just be petty of me. I have to appreciate greatness. And this guy scores at will. He scores at will.
That's it. That's like what I've seen differently is I'm just going to turn this game around. We're losing 2-0. No problem. I'll score a hat trick.
Literally.
Oh, you just put the team on your back, which is a blessing and sometimes a curse when we talk about the Maple Leafs. It's like, where's your depth scoring? We're starting to see that more. But when you have someone like Austin Matthews, it's hard to nitpick. You got one of the best players in the world on your team. It's hard to say anything negative.
How about Bobby McMahon? What a kind of improvement in his game. Like, he's given the opportunity on the second line now. That's pretty impressive after his hat-trick.
Yeah, I love Bobby McMahon because he's such a success story. Like, he was playing for the ECHL Growlers, and he's just, I love stories like that because everyone that has a certain storyline, but when there's a guy that's gone through so much in his hockey career and continues to have like the fortitude to work hard, to push his way through and gets an opportunity and takes it and is successful. Isn't that like what the beauty of sports is? So talking about Bobby McMahon over the last couple of weeks has been awesome. The day he got the hat trick, I was like, Bobby McMatthews. And so we were joking a bit, like, he's got the Matthews energy in him. He's got the vibe. The players seem to love him too. You can tell, like, they've been around so many pros. They've been around so many top draft picks, but I think the players seem to gravitate to wanting to support a guy that's just like getting his chance, right? The way they post the belt photos of him, they're so excited about their guy getting some ice time and making the most of it. So yeah, I'm a sucker for a story like that. He's been a fun one.
Getting into your story, actually, my first question is, who influenced you to get into sports media?
That's a good question. I actually thought when I was growing up, I'd want to be a teacher. Both my parents were high school teachers. They're retired now, but I always found myself, and that's why I like doing podcasts too, and like helping students. It's like, I really enjoy the learning process. I did 2 university degrees. I obviously like university. I like school. I challenged myself academically, but I thought I'd be a teacher. And then it was actually my sophomore season at Dartmouth. I had hip surgery. So I redshirted that whole year and I was kind of looking for some other way to be involved in the team when you can't be on the ice and you can't be training with the team. It's hard mentally. So I was like, I'm going to take over the team social media. Didn't really have one. I'm going to work on social media. Maybe I'll help with game ops. Maybe I'll help like get visibility for the women's hockey team. And so I just kind of like created my own role, like whether I don't even, I was doing everything because short staff and, you know, women's hockey at the NCAA level is not still like the men's level. So during that sophomore season, I just kind of said, I'm going to try something. And I really enjoyed it. I love telling the stories of our teammates. I love just like helping talk sports with people that might not be fans of our team. And then after that sophomore season, I started to think more about, well, I'm from Toronto. Toronto's an amazing place to get your foot in the door if you're interested in this. And I got my first internship during one of my summers when I came back home from university at TSN, actually. And I was just working in the marketing department, you know, not on air, not in any way involved in the broadcast, but I met lots of great people. I got to see one side of sport media. And then when I went back for my senior year at Dartmouth, I started looking at other programs that when I graduated, I could end up coming to. So TMU was the perfect one. I live in Toronto. I got 2 years of eligibility from my hip surgery so I could play U Sports hockey. So it all worked out perfectly. But that year that I didn't play hockey, it could have been really hard. It could have been really a setback for me, but I'm obviously now really happy that I decided to make something of it, create my own job in a sense, because I found something that I really ended up loving, and it's obviously been my career ever since.
Well, let's talk about that kind of transfer over to TMU for your sport media. Mm-hmm. You are a graduate of said program. Like, how come you decided to go there? Was it mainly the hip surgery that kind of forced mm-hmm. your way there?
Well, yes and no. So I definitely, after only playing 3 years of NCAA hockey, I was like, I wish I fully got, you know, a fourth year and I guess a fifth year in Canada. The CWHL was still around at that point. I thought maybe playing professionally would be really great, not only for career opportunities, but playing professional is amazing. I wanted to help grow the game. TMU, their sport media program, obviously, like you would know, is one of the best ever. I knew some people that had gone through RTA. This was before it was sport media, and talked really highly just about the RTA program in general. And then in the small crazy world, my hockey coach, who was my coach from all 4 years of high school and 3 years, or all 4 years of high school on my rep team, and then also was my high school hockey coach, he, Ken Dufton, was one of the assistant or associate coaches at TMU at the time. So, you know, we stay in touch. Like, he obviously cares a lot about the players that go through the Toronto Arrows organization. And I went to Bishop Strachan School in Toronto, so he was my coach twice over. I was talking to him, you know, one of these summers and mentioned about my eligibility. He's like, you know, I help out at TMU. We would love to have you. And I was like, that's an interesting idea, because not a lot of people were doing the NCAA and U Sports route at the time. So we talked about it, and they were fired up to have me. And I did talk to a couple players on the team, and they said, the school is amazing. The arena is amazing. You're right in downtown Toronto. And for me, opportunities are right at your fingertips. I ended up working, you know, the Score, the Blue Jays, the Maple Leafs, Yahoo Sports, all of it's right here in Toronto. So it was kind of a meshing of the personal connection I had with one of the coaches, obviously wanting to continue to play hockey and go to an amazing program. So that was like the perfect trifecta of things.
Well, no kidding. They were happy to have you. I mean, you're in the record books. You own so many records. It's crazy. Yeah. So what's it like, you know, owning so many single season and franchise records?
I will say, like, I didn't really know what to expect. NCAA hockey, I think is still a little bit ahead of U Sports hockey. Because whenever you're growing up, you start getting scouted, you think about going to the States. Like, I wanted to go to play for an Ivy League school. I really wanted to go to the level. And at this point, when I was going to university, it was 2012, things have definitely changed now. Like, U Sports hockey has taken a lot of strides forward. So I think I got a little bit of an upper edge, just the amount of money that goes into NCAA schools, the training programs. It was still steps ahead of U Sports. So when I came back to play U Sports in 2016, yeah, I not only was 4 years older than most people, which was, or like 3 to 4 years older than people, I was a freshman for U Sports when I was already 3 years deep in NCAA hockey. So kind of cheated my way into the record books, but I will say it was really awesome. Our head coach, Lisa Haley at the time, trusted in my leadership opportunity. I was already a captain in my second year. And I think I brought a lot of that experience from NCAA to try to help the team grow like a culture, grow like a program. And yeah, I mean, I'm still just a hop, skip, and a jump away from PMU. I try to go back whenever I can to see them, but it was really special. I love my experience there. I got out right before the pandemic, which obviously put a lot of stress on student athletes and students in general. So it worked for me perfectly. Sometimes I run into to players still. I'm like, I'd love to get out there and get out with you guys and just like rip around the ice. Cause I mean, you know, Mattamy is beautiful. So it was a really wonderful experience. And yeah, to have performed at a high level, that's always a nice treat.
So Lisa Haley is still the coach. Like, does that blow your mind at all? Cause she's been around a while.
Well, she's amazing. Like really one of my, I think she was actually my first female coach. That shows, you know, we need more female coaches in hockey. Cause I was 22 years old, but she's awesome. She's so dedicated to the game and she's just a wealth of knowledge. And she says yes to everything. She's doing side coaching in Hungary. She's doing PMU. She helped with the PHF as well. Like she's so smart. She's so driven. She's a wonderful people person too. Like I really love my relationship. I ended up helping as an assistant coach the final 2 years at TMU because I just wanted to be around the team and I wanted to continue to help out. So I'm not surprised because she's probably got another 20 years in her. Like she's absolutely one of my favorite coaches. So yeah, the team needs a little bit more success, but I'm sure she'll find a way to get the right players in there.
So how come you wanted to become that student coach?
I really liked, as I said, like maybe it's because I thought about being a teacher growing up or like, I just really think helping younger students and helping those in my previous footsteps. I don't see it as like a responsibility, but you know, sometimes you have a connection with a player when I was a freshman that was a senior. And I remember, for an example, there was one when I was a freshman at Dartmouth that kind of like takes you under your wing and like helps you go through the X's and O's of university. Like it's not easy to be a college athlete. It's not easy to be, you know, far away from home or living in a big city or balancing school and social life and being an athlete. So I think I gave like a little bit more of an accessible dialogue with the students. I was only a couple of years older than them. You know, Lisa's your coach, your head coach. Like sometimes you're not really going to share, like, I'm struggling with this and this. So I think I was a nice bridge between being a student. I was still there in the program at TMU. And I just played with them 2 years ago or a year ago. So I think they saw that respect level. I was the captain of the team. Like I did see it as an opportunity to just give back a little bit. And I really enjoyed it. Like really had a blast too. And I had never really coached before. So it was a challenge, but it was a really fun one. I hope one day when my career settles down a bit more, I could do more coaching because I really, really did like it.
So like I mentioned at the start of the episode here, you work for 590 The Fan. How did you end up getting that job there?
That's a connection based one. And like, sometimes it's hard when you talk to students where you're like, I didn't apply for a job. Somebody knew me, but yeah, I will say this industry is really relationship based. If you're a good person, you work hard, people talk and opportunities come. So when I was a student at TMU still, I got a job with Yahoo Sports Canada. It was a 1 year contract while I was a full-time student and I was helping, I was playing. It was just, there's a lot, but I said yes to everything. And so I kind of crazy actually, but I was a full-time student and I also had a full-time job. So I worked at Yahoo Sports my role was kind of writing for the website, doing video content, hosting, you know, NHL chats, NBA chats, like just doing kind of they were very video heavy. Sometimes we had to learn how to program the website. Sometimes we had to help with social media. It was a very small team. Fortunately, Yahoo Sports no longer in Canada. That was a sad thing, but you know, it was a really small team. So you got to do everything. My boss was Dan Toman. And a couple of years down the road, Dan got a job at Sportsnet. He was the director of audio, and he was looking to switch up the audio programming at Sportsnet 590 Fan. And he called me one day. I was like, what are you up to? And at that point, it was just the pandemic was still on. So I wasn't really working full time anywhere. I was kind of doing like odd gigs here and there. And he said, like, you know, I think you'd be a great fit for our morning show. And I was like, wow, like that is incredible. Never done radio before. I've never hosted a show 3 hours from 6 a.m. till 9 a.m. or it was 10 a.m. at times too. But we kind of went through the process of like what he would want for me, created a new team there. And so the opportunity came to me from somebody that I had known previously, and we had a great working relationship. So that was, once again, a really nice blessing to know that somebody had that faith in me. Because I feel like a lot of times you work these jobs and you say yes to everything, and it might take some time for it to come back around. So that for me was clearly how I got started at SportsCenter, still there, and continue to like grow in my role. And that's been awesome.
So what was the sleep schedule like for the morning show? Like, did you invest in melatonin stocks?
You know what? You actually couldn't, because any other morning radio show, like, you know, we have Roz and Mocha, for example, they're one of our morning shows, not in the sports department. Not to say that they do this, but they could technically go to bed at 8 p.m. because they don't have to stay up and watch all the sports and be ready to talk about the Maple Leafs game on the West Coast that starts tonight at 10 p.m. So I would say most of the time during any hockey season, football season, baseball season, NBA season, I'm getting to bed midnight, because you got to be prepped to talk about the show. So I'm sitting on my couch, I'm watching. Sometimes I've got the Raptors game and the Leafs game, and I'm streaming, MLB playoffs, and I got to know everything to talk about at 6 a.m. So you got your doc up, you're taking notes, you're trying to have one eye on everything. And by the time you've prepped fully where you're confident to talk live on the radio, it might be close to midnight. Close the laptop, try to get to sleep, and I'm up at 4:30 every morning, head to the office, be ready to go on the air for 6, 3 hours live, come home, nap. Like, sometimes I'd be driving like, okay, I'm almost home. Like, hoping, holding your eyes open at times. But like, cause the adrenaline is high when you're on the air, you're having so much fun, you're talking to guests, like you're talking about sports. And then you get in your car to drive home and it's 9 a.m. You're kind of like, oh, that was, you know, I'm running on fumes really. So I'd get a good nap and try to get a workout in to get myself back up and going, and then do it all again, back on the couch that evening, watching all the sports. So it's a completely different lifestyle that I'm living now. But like the hustle, the grind was so worth it, right? You know, you got an opportunity. People woke up with you every morning and listened to you and drove into work and got your podcast and really cared about like your thoughts. The first thing they want to listen to is, what'd you think about that Leafs game? What'd you think about that call in, you know, the playoffs? Like, did they blow it? Like, they want to hear what you have to say. So you want to be like as prepared as possible. That's why sometimes sleep takes a back burner. But yeah, I did that for 2 years. So probably lost a couple of years of my life, but that's all right.
You mentioned the pandemic and how you were kind of in and out of gigs. Like, how did that affect your job at the time?
Yeah. So luckily, well, I don't know. Luckily is a hard word to use in the pandemic, but I did have this role with Sportsnet during one of our waves of the pandemic, but it's pretty difficult to do a radio show not in person, but we successfully pulled it off via Zoom. My co-hosts and I, so it was me, Blake Murphy, and JD Bunkus. And it definitely took a lot of the chemistry and a lot of the, when you're talking to your friend in person, there's a completely different vibe than having a conversation through Zoom, because you're like, wait, what are you saying? Oh, you want to go? You want me to go? You're signaling like, I'm going next, or you have the next question. Like, it definitely disrupted a little bit of, I think, how the show sounded. Obviously with the pandemic, we weren't able to go into the office every day because you're sharing the microphone. Another show comes in right after, shares a microphone. So for a little bit of the time, we were actually testing every morning and going in, and that made a big difference. But during the summer, it kind of made it more like, let's work from home. You got a great podcast set up. You got a great microphone. We pulled it off great. Like, I don't think many people, you know, would have complained about the quality of it, but you can tell when you've been doing this for long enough that you just miss like hanging out, being able to communicate in person. So we did it through Zoom. We'd wake up, like log in, the sun would be down. I remember sitting in my office, and then like by hour one, it's starting to rise. And like, it was kind of a weird vibe, but you had to do what you had to do. And everybody kind of went through those struggles, but we did get through the show. And yeah, I'm glad everyone was safe and sound.
What do you remember about when Rudy Gobert touched all the phones and abruptly ended sports?
Oh God, that was scary. Like I think in that moment we were just like, what's about to happen? And nobody could have ever predicted the magnitude of this, right? And it was scary. Like it was really scary. And for us having to talk about it and having to talk about mostly like really sad stories in terms of this league is now closing, this league is shut down, this isn't going to happen, this player has COVID. Like we were sharing a lot of positive news, and it was really hard to host a morning show or to have a role in any capacity where you're supposed to be entertaining people. And what you're really talking about is the world falling apart, and sports is an outlet that a lot of us use in times when, you know, you need something to cheer on, you need a story, you want to connect with a team, you want to just disconnect from your regular job. But our regular job is telling sports. You about sports. So it was a challenge, definitely. I think times it was like we were just constantly consuming too for our job all this bad stuff, like all of these issues and all of these shutdowns, and then trying to tell people about it. I struggled with it too. Like it was just like it was hard mentally. But you know, one segment of the show that I made us create was called the A-List, and it was my moment, Ailish's A-List, where I told you something good about sports, right? Whether it was like a funny clip I saw online or a success story of somebody like a Bobby McMahon, but you know, not to that point, but like something where you're like, oh, I love that, I love hearing that. Maybe it's somewhere else in the world. So I tried to add that into our show, and I think people really liked it because you need that sometimes. You need like, yeah, you know, I'm in a crazy spot right now, I can't see my family, I'm quarantined, but it's nice to hear a good story. And so I brought that onto the show, and I was really proud of it because I think we all needed it.
Well, one kind of big thing in Toronto was the All-Star Weekend. What was kind of your favorite part about it?
Oh, that was so, so great. So this was about a couple weeks ago now. NHL All-Star Weekend. I think it might be actually one of my favorite career weekends, career moments for myself, because as you know now, we host a 6 p.m. show called The Fan Pregame. And it's every day from Monday to Friday. And so we're in a new role. We're on TV. We're also on radio. It's a great opportunity for us to talk about what's next that night. So this is a newish show for us. But I was given an opportunity to do some of the stuff at the rink. So it started with Thursday night. The women had their 3-on-3 showcase for the PWHL. And Sportsnet actually asked me to be on the broadcast on TV ringside interviewing some of the players. So I've never done that before. I've never been given that opportunity before. So huge career moment. All of these girls on the ice I've played with, played against. So super weird in a sense to be able to interview some of my friends. So I had that opportunity on the Thursday night and felt incredible. I took a moment to be like, this is really huge for me. Hopefully it opens a door to other opportunities, but got that on Thursday night. Then we got invited to Justin Bieber's after party when he had a private concert. So,
That's sick.
That was cool. That was sick. Pretty cool.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, he had, I know. I had to flex, but he had a private party for the NHLers and the PWHL people and whatever. And somehow I got myself in there and he played a private concert.
I had to finagle my way in.
I was like, I'll take your, yeah, you want to give me this pass? Sure. And so that was Thursday night. Friday, you wake up. Friday, we had the skills comp, and we were calling the game for the radio on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. So we had up in the booth at Scotiabank Arena, we had Jim Ralph and John Bartlett, and they were sending, all right, we're headed down to Ailish ringside. And I would have a mic and I'd be putting it in the face of Sidney Crosby.
Yeah, and I'm like what?
Hey, Sid. So that was crazy. And we were just on radio. So, you know, a little bit of a different, like once there's a TV camera, sometimes the guys like stiffen up, but I'm just like, hey, what's up, JT Miller? Like what happened out there? Like you missed like 3 shots. And then Sid comes by and I'm asking him about his skate out in Montana. So that was really fun because it was relaxed. I'm sure it sounded great on the radio. I didn't even listen. I was just like in the zone grabbing NHL.
Yeah, you were dialed in. So you were locked in.
It was pretty cool Friday night. And then Saturday we did the game, the 3-on-3 game from the booth, and we just did the intermissions, Justin and I. And even just being there to watch Matthews win, like their team, it was like all encompassing, an amazing weekend. I got a bunch of different roles sprinkled in there. So yeah, probably one of my like most successful career weekends, but then you're pretty exhausted Sunday, just like all that adrenaline, like what happened? And then you look at your photos, you're like, oh, I did interview Sidney Crosby. And, you know, I did go to Justin Bieber's concert. So really cool. Really, really cool. And it's too bad. Like, it's like kind of the last all-star weekend that's going to look that format. But we got to have it in Toronto. So, you know, selfishly works out for us.
So did you ever like sit back and kind of realize, like, you interviewed Sidney Crosby, the guy scored the golden goal for our country. Like one of the most iconic Canadian moments.
Yeah. It was funny. So the way that was working was a lady from the NHL would just bring a player over to me after each skills competition. And it was all the players participating. So I got like JT Miller, Elias Pettersson, Quinn Hughes, and it was, I was like, how many Vancouver Canucks are here? And it just kept coming and coming. And, you know, Matthew Barzal, and I was like, yeah, you know, no offense to them, but like, I see Matthews over there, McDavid. And I was like, you know, and so at some point, I guess she ran out of Canucks to come bring me, and she starts skating over with Sidney Crosby, and I'm like, I took like a deep breath, and like, I try not to think about, you know, this person being whoever famous. We've interviewed, you know, Gretzky before. And like, that's so cool. I know Marie-Philippe Poulin personally. So like, I try to just be a pro. And that's a very good example.
You're just
of
another person.
Just trying to be like, okay, Sidney Crosby skating up to me. This is exciting. And so I took a deep breath. We had a lot of fun. Actually, I thought the interview was one of my favorite because I just poked fun at him, like, oh, you were a day late. Like, how was Montana? And he's like, he's like, yeah, I didn't know people were going to find out about that. I'm like, you're Sidney Crosby. And so we're just joking off a little bit. Like, it was really fun. And then my producer was there, and he didn't have to sneak photo. He took a photo of us. And afterwards he showed it to me, and you're just like, you're this close. You're like really engaged with Sidney Crosby. He showed me the photo, and I was like, oh yeah, that's pretty cool. And I sent it to my family. They're like, no way. And I was like, yeah, like no way actually. So then that's kind of what it hit me when I saw the picture and realized like that actually really did happen. It's only 30 seconds of your life, but a pretty, pretty cool 30 seconds. So yeah, that was definitely a highlight of that weekend. So I might get that photo put on the wall. It was pretty cool.
It might have to be framed. It might have to be framed. Like it is, I think it bears a framing of a photo because it's so legendary. Cool.
Yeah.
Do you have a favorite athlete interaction from All-Star Weekend?
That one is certainly up there. Like, I think it's because of just how legendary Sid is. You mentioned the golden goal. I was in high school watching that. That Olympics is probably like the most memorable for me. You got the women winning on home ice. You got Sidney Crosby. It's pretty hard to top head to head with him. But I will say, for a more personal connection, my best friend is Laura Stacey. She's on the Olympic team. We played 4 years of high school hockey together. Then we played 4 years of Dartmouth together. And then we played on the CWHL together. Like, she's my best friend. And we got to choose who we wanted to interview for the PWHL All-Star sideline. And I said, Laura Stacey. And so she found out that I was interviewing her. She's like, no way, you're interviewing me. I'm like, hard hitting question.
Yeah.
And so that's another photo. Like, I think for the two of us, you know, we knew each other when we were 14. And then now I'm going to be 30 this year. So is she. And like, our lives have been so intertwined. We've done everything together. And now I get to support her and do my job while she's doing her job. So we had an interview together and, you know, just a minute and a half. For 2 minutes or whatever, but we got so many messages from former teammates that played with us, like a photo of us being like, that was so cool, right? And I have the interview saved because for Laura, she's like the most humble person I know. Like, she hates talking about herself, and so that's my job. And the best thing about what, you know, that weekend was her great-grandfather is King Clancy. He's in the rafters at Scotiabank Arena. He's, you know, the King Clancy Memorial Trophy, is one of the most amazing hockey players that we have. And so she wears number 7 for him. He's number 7. So I just asked her, like, what does it mean for you to skate out on the ice underneath your grandfather's banner? He was one of the first hockey players in the NHL, like working to build the NHL to where it is. You're now working to build the PWHL to where it is. Like, your story parallels are incredible. And just that moment where she really, I think, allowed herself to be proud and to say, this means so much to me. that made me proud because, you know, we talk all the time, we send each other TikToks. It's like, no, this is serious about you. And I want you to know how big this moment was. So yeah, she gets an edge up on Sid, but like they're close, you know, like the interview interaction. It's 1A, 1B.
My last question for you is, do you have any advice for younger journalists?
Yeah, definitely. I think it's, to me, like, if you look at my resume, and like we've talked about like 15 different roles, I said yes to a lot of things, whether I thought that it was going to be my career path or not, whether it was, you know, oh, this is something I don't, it's been, nothing's beneath you, right? Like you're starting out, you want to get to know people, you want to get to know what you like, you want to work in different industries. If you think you want to be an on-air host, that's amazing. And I love being an on-air host, but I also tried marketing and I tried writing and I tried social media and I tried video editing and I tried XYZ because that makes me A, more desirable to be hired, and B, just a more well-rounded broadcaster, right? So I would say it's great to have goals. It's great to have a career path, but everybody's career path looks different. I've taken many twists and turns and I've gone up and I've definitely gone down. And I think it's just good to be passionate about what you do. And don't be afraid to fail. Like you started a podcast and it's incredible, but like, I'm sure episode one or two,
it was terrible. You know, I failed. Yeah, absolutely.
Exactly. But isn't it a nice reference point to go back and listen to those and be like, mm-hmm. I've gotten better. I've learned the craft. And so same with me, my first radio shows were probably unlistenable, but now I'm 3 years into it and it's something I'm working on getting better every time. So I would say, push yourself. Don't be afraid to make mistakes. You're going to continue on your journey and it's going to look different than everyone else's. So just love what you do and work hard.
Awesome. Well, I'd like to thank again, Ailish Forfar, for joining me on today's podcast. Thank you again, Ailish.
Thanks so much.